GNC 581.
It's Friday,
June 4th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by
GoDaddy.com.
Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Well, that didn't quite go as planned, but everyone, welcome to the show. I have a great show lined up for you, and you know what comes next. Strap in. Here it comes.
All right, people, I need a go, no-go for the Geek News Central podcast. Digital archive recorders.
We're go fly.
Microphone.
We're go fly.
Video feed.
Go.
Web browser.
Go.
RSS data stream aggregator.
Go fly.
Interflux Toddism suppressor.
All right. I'm confused.
Host readiness check.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
The Geek News Central podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to go. Cue Todd in...
5.
Button, who's got the button?
4.
There is no cause for alarm.
3.
Everybody hold on to something.
2.
Just press the button.
1.
It's showtime.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from the beautiful state of Hawaii via the Geek News Central studio overlooking Honolulu. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Todd Cochran, and of course, I had my youngest one in here, and he got a little stage fright at the very beginning, and we had practice. Just before I get ready to do the show, generally, it's about shower time, so I take the six-year-old, and him and I get a shower, so I'm in the shower. So, are you gonna practice with me tonight? You're going to start the show off? And he was like, yeah. So we're practicing the shower, you know, getting him started. It's Friday, June 4th. I was trying to get the annotation down with him. But anyway, it's fun to make them part of the show and get them excited. And who knows, their creative juices may flow. And someday they may follow in Dad's footsteps. We will see. I'm just making sure with all the excitement here, I've got all the recorders running. I do. I'm off with a good start today. No issues for the show. Talk about that here in a second. But hey, everyone, welcome again to the podcast. And of course, I want to give a warm welcome to the Ohana, all of you that are longtime subscribers of the show. And, of course, I want to give a warm welcome to listeners from 165 countries worldwide. And I want to encourage you all to get signed up for the newsletter. The newsletter will contain everything that I'm going to talk about tonight, including all the show notes, all the links to all the various articles and so forth. And if you get signed up for that, that basically gets you on the insider track on what's happening here on the show. And, of course, we want you to subscribe to the show as well. You can find links to subscribe to the show either via iTunes, Zune Marketplace, or your favorite podcatcher via an RSS feed that's available on the website at geeknewscentral.com. Of course, we want to encourage you to watch this show on the Tech Podcast channel on the Roku or the Boxy. So if you have a Roku box or you have a Boxy, make sure you check us out. And a great way to catch a lot of the content, a lot of podcasters, because we have the Blueberry channel and the Tech Podcast channel available on the Roku. So lots of great, I guess, independent created content. And so I encourage you to pick up one of those devices over at Roku.com. Hey, today's a big day. We relaunched the Blueberry website. And actually, let me see if I can bring this up real quick and show you guys what it looks like. Those of you that are watching on Ustream, and so it's a brand new site design. It's HTML5 compatible, so if you're in there with Chrome, you can use that, and it's got a full interactive on the bottom of it. You can basically zoom through a variety of different shows. The shows that are all on the featured page of the website now have all went through an approval process to make sure that their shows were really kind of top-notch as far as graphic arts go, descriptions, all the information you're going to need to know to consume the content, especially in a Roku, because what we've started collecting is the actual maturity level. In other words, the ratings. So they actually go through and they rate their shows on what their show's rated at now. And that doesn't necessarily transform on the website at blueberry.com, but it goes into the Roku device, and you'll start seeing those ratings on those shows as well, so you'll know what type of content you're getting. But we're pretty excited about being able to bring this new website design. It's been in work for a little bit. We're really happy about it. Of course, you can still see all of the content that's on the website by browsing in categories, but we've got information here for all of our content creators, and we're really excited about the new site launch. So if you check out blueberry.com, the new site's up and online, and we're excited to be able to bring it to you. So that kind of ties in with the Roku content for the Blueberry Channel starting to increase. So now, shows are going to be able to approve, basically go through the approval process. It's pretty much automated. So now you're going to start seeing a lot more shows pop up into the Roku device, but we're only allowing those producers to get on there if they go through our process. And really, it takes, if they're all set, it really takes maybe 5 minutes to go through the process. And so we should see a lot more shows starting to show up. People have been talking about this a little bit on Twitter tonight. But if you visit the site with Chrome, it's fully HTML5 or Safari. If you come into the site with Firefox, we still are loading the actual player that's on the front site in some JavaScript. I don't know exactly what magic he's done to it. But really, the site looks the same no matter what browser you load it in. And we're still working on some bugs. So it's kind of a soft launch. So thought I would just talk about that a little bit at the start of the show tonight. I was excited that we were able to get it up online today. A couple of days late, but the main thing was it's up and online. Want to talk just a little bit. Actually, let me go back here, and I need to do a little adjustment. Yeah, camera got set up to a higher higher level, and I could actually see it, so... There we go. That's a little better for using those of you on Ustream. Isn't nothing like live adjustments to cameras. But one thing I'm wanting to do for Geekness Central is I have a project that I need a search engine optimization expert for. So if you know someone that you trust that's an SEO expert, someone that has actually done you good for your company, send me a recommendation. Or if you're an SEO expert or so-called, if you think you are, send me an email with your credentials and the clients you've worked for, and just basically kind of give me some history and some references so I can go out to them. But I have a small project that I need an SEO expert for. It's confidential. I can't talk about exactly what I'm trying to do. So I won't go any further than that within the actual context of the show tonight. But let me know if you are one of those people or you know someone that's good. You know, SEO people, the thing about, I get a little leery about asking to hire an SEO person is that there's thousands of them. And my goal is really to find someone that's good for the small project and willing to work on a small project for me, and should be a piece of cake for someone that is worth their weight in gold. So we'll see. I'm not going to pay them their weight in gold, but... You get the idea there. Let me see. Let me look at my little list here. Local Show Production Machine. Hey, it's basically running now. I removed the two sticks of memory that I put into it, and I cleared it all up. Apparently, the two sticks that I bought are not cooperating, and I had went through the manufacturer, made sure everything was, you know, and matched the right memory sticks, and so I got to go back to HP and say, you know, what the heck is going on? What am I supposed to be using in this thing? Because it was definitely causing major issues on the last show. So I think tonight we're back to normal. So I'll keep my fingers crossed that we're back to normal. But I've definitely had been tested over the past week or so, or not week, but last couple of weeks on stuff going on with the show. Hey, also, those of you got the Insider video, looking for some feedback. Did you like it? Was it what you were expecting? Those of you that are part of the Geek News Central Insider, and you can join that by going to geeknewscentral.com/insider. If you're an insider and you got the video, what did you think? And just a private email back would be great. I'm just kind of curious what your guys' thoughts were and how you liked it, whether it met your expectations or not. So just a little feedback on that. Today's show is the last show here in Honolulu for 2 weeks. I leave Sunday night to head out to Texas. I'll be in Texas for a week. And then on Saturday, a week from Saturday, I fly to Rochester, New York. I'm going to be there a week, and then I'm going to be home for a while. So that is exciting for me in that this is going to be hopefully the last trip for a while. And but the next four shows will be on the road. And so on Monday night, if you want to watch the show live, I'll be getting started probably, you know, I'm going to be jet lagged like a big dog because I don't get into Dallas until 2:30 in the afternoon. So I'll get in a hotel 3:30. Yeah, it's, you know, it's, we'll see what time I get the show ready, but I'm hoping to be ready by 8 p.m. Let's see, what's Dallas? Dallas is in Central. So I hope to be ready to go by 8 p.m. Central. And then, of course, two shows out of Rochester, New York will be 8 p.m. Eastern. That'll be the goal to get started on, 8 p.m. Eastern the following 2 weeks. So lots of opportunities. If you want to watch in your time zone, you'll be able to be able to do so. I think that's it on my notes here of stuff that I've got lined up. And I guess the main thing is geeknewscentral.com/offers. Check out all the great offers on that page itself. Of course, if you want to buy something from the Ohana store, you can do that by going to cafepress.com/Ohana store. Twitter tags for the show are hashtags GNC and hashtag Ohana. And of course, come over to and follow the show on Facebook as well. It's a great way to keep up to date on what's happening and provide feedback. If you got a Wi-Fi device, you change the SSID over to geeknewscentral.com to let all your neighbors know that we're live and well. And, of course, I want to thank our sponsors. Hey, if you're looking for a domain name, a dedicated server, shared hosting account, any type of online product, really the only place to go is GoDaddy.com. As my son was saying in the shower, we were watching the Indy 500, he said, "Dad, you know, didn't you remember that commercial where they were talking about they should have called it GoMama.com?" And it was a commercial that he had seen. So I said, "Wow, you got affected by advertising." "No, no, no, no. Yeah, I hear you always talking about GoDaddy. So I always pay attention to their commercials." And I thought that was really cute. So really, GoDaddy.com is the place to go to get all of your online products, whether it be, again, a domain name, a server, shared hosting account. Of course, use my promo codes. Share my promo codes with your friends, family members, people that you know. Send a link back to me to my my GoDaddy page. That helps build page rank on Google. And use that promo code Todd. It'll save you 10% on orders, on non-domain orders. Geek5 will save you 15% on orders $20 or more. Geek5 will save you 15%. I actually just said that. Todd20 will save you 20% on a one-year shared hosting account. Geek5 will save you 15% on an order $20 more. So thanks for GoDaddy for being a longtime sponsor here. And thank all of you that continue to buy their products over there and use my promo codes and share them. I really found this week how GoToMeeting has become very indispensable for me. It has become a product that I find myself using as much as I use my email client or being in a browser, living here in Hawaii, oftentimes it's not possible for me to just get in a car and go somewhere. And I have to meet online. And we're getting ready right now for a Q3 advertising. I've been meeting with media buyers online and in online meetings. And you know, you guys know that anytime I can avoid getting an airplane, I do. And that's why I use GoToMeeting every day. I hold meetings online instead of wasting time and money. Not only sitting in traffic, of course, in Hawaii, I can get in my car and drive all day and end up back in my driveway, but GoToMeeting, brought to you by the folks at Citrix, is the easiest and most secure way to hold an online meeting. You know, I've had meetings up and running in seconds. I've had people share their screens with me, show stuff on their, you know, back and forth without any training whatsoever. So you can show them what you're talking about online and use their voice IP product as part of it as well, so that you don't have to actually pick up a telephone as well. GoToMeeting, of course, is perfect for sales presentations, collaboration, and so forth, and it's affordable, just $49 a month. You can hold as many meetings as you want, includes phone and voice over IP conferencing free. So as a listener from this show, you can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. That's a month of unlimited online meetings free. For this special offer, visit GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast for that free 30-day trial. And I want to thank GoDaddy and GoToMeeting for being longtime sponsors here. Okay, let me look here and make sure I've got through all my stuff. I think I've got everything covered that I was going to cover. Not a lot of chitter chatter on just administrative stuff. So we can get right into the content of the night. Of course, I want to welcome those of you that are on Ustream that are up late watching the show. Thanks for hanging out with me. I appreciate it. And Twitter, let people know I'm online. Let them know I'm running right now so that they come join us. And love to hear you guys' feedback as well. Those of you on Ustream, let me know what you think of the new Blueberry design. That is important to us. We're looking for feedback from everybody. If you guys didn't see my blog yesterday, you need to read it. I'm thoroughly and utterly done with AT&T. They have, you know, all of you probably have already seen the announcements of them changing from an unlimited plan on your phones, your iPhones, and your iPad to a metered or throttled or bandwidth capped plan. By those of you that are going to buy a new product from Apple / AT&T, being limited now to 2 gigs per month unless you pay more money. I've seen a lot of blog posts. People say, oh, it's not so bad. Most of us aren't using very much media. I don't consider myself a power user when it comes to my phone. I use EVDO heavily. That's why I have 2 EVDO cards, one from Sprint, one from Verizon. I use them a lot. When I'm on the road, I'll burn through the bandwidth on those cards pretty quickly. And yet, I use my phone to check email. I do some Twitter stuff on there, maybe check Facebook. So it's not like I'm on my phone 24/7, but I use my phone a lot. And when I looked at my utilization, I was well over 2 gigs, really the last 3 or 4 months running. And I really didn't consider myself be heavily using the phone. I'm not down. Well, I have streamed some media to listen to some media streamed, but not on a regular basis. Stuff I try to sync up as much as I possibly can. But AT&T has essentially thrown down the gauntlet for 2% of their users. Now, there is an analysis has been done by the New York Times, who has said that while AT&T says that 98% of their users are not going to be affected by the, what browser did I load here? I definitely didn't load the one I wanted, because I was going to bring this up in, and let me take care of this real quick. The, what I was expecting was, well, let me get, just load this up here so everybody can see this. How come that's not in there? What has changed? Well, that just makes me angry now. What I'm trying to do is load this article in Chrome so that I can share this with the folks on Ustream. So what they've done is New York Times has basically went out and did a, they were able to find out how much bandwidth everyone was using. And they said that 2% of the folks using their phones were using more than 2 gigs. If you look at the number of subscribers that the folks over at AT&T have on smartphones, that would equate to about 680,000 people are actually going to be affected. 660,000 are going to be affected by these new data limits negatively, while the other 98% of their subscribers are probably going to save a little money. So how much money are you going to save? $5 if you want to be on a 2 gig plan. And very few of you are going to be able to go down to their lowest plan. But what really gets my goat about what they have announced and what they did is that the iPad has been on the street a month. The 3G has been on the street less than a month. And the big selling point for the 3G iPad was, okay, you're going to be able to buy this smaller plan, or if, when you need to, you're going to be able to bump up to the bigger plan. And now the bigger plan is going to be 2 gigs. And when you run out of the 2 gigs, you can give them another $25. That's how they're, if you run out in the same month of the subscription. So in other words, if you, June 1st, you've upgraded your plan to the 2 gig plan that they're going to offer starting the 7th, and you go 14 or 15 days and you're out of bandwidth, you can pay another $25 to get another 2 gigs. Whereas before this all started, you'd be able to go the whole month on the $25 plan or $30 plan, whatever they were charging for the old plan. So why would they change this within a month? Well, I think what they found was as soon as the 3G iPad start showing up on the street, I'm sure they got hammered. I'm sure they saw data usage that was over the chart. I'm sure they said, oh my goodness, we have got to do something or we're dead. Did they not think that this was going to be a popular thing to do, is to use 3G to use the iPad as a computer as much as possible? Did they not think this? They say it's not because of usage of the iPad. I think AT&T has essentially taken all of us, whether you are a current customer or soon to be one, and they've bent us over, spanked our butts, and basically have killed unlimited wireless plans within their company. Now, maybe I'm overreacting, but, you know, this is the same company that promised us tethering a year ago. So to add insult to injury, you want to tether your phone? You can only tether your phone if you get a new contract. And if you get a new contract, then you are, once again, limited to this 2 gigs a month. Plus, it's going to cost you $20 to tether your phone to a computer. Can you tether your iPad? No. You can't tether your iPad to your iPhone. They're disallowing it. They're not going to allow Bluetooth sharing, everything. It's all shut off. So, $20 for 2 gigs, $25 for 2 gigs, plus $20 for the tethering. So you're paying $45 plus the cost of your phone plan just to tether. No one's going to do that. Doesn't make any sense. 2 gigs burn through fast if you tether your phone. Fast. You know, and on top of that, people that were not happy with AT&T started emailing their CEO. And apparently, AT&T reacted and threatened one of their customers by saying, if you email the CEO again, we're going to send a cease and desist letter to you. Can you imagine that? You write to the CEO of the company, you talk about the displeasure you have and what they have done, and they threaten you with legal action. This has been confirmed. And today they apologized for threatening a customer. The full statement they said was, we're apologizing to our customer. We're working with him today to address his questions and concerns. This is not the way we want to treat customers. Well, why did they do it in the first place? From Facebook to significant customer service channels, AT&T strives to provide our customers with easy ways to have their questions addressed. Let me take you back a little bit in time. Back in the days when AT&T was a monopoly and you got your long distance service through AT&T or the Bell companies, before the Bell breakup, when AT&T had a throttle, basically their hands wrapped around every citizen in this country's phone service, when they got broke up as a monopoly, everyone, and this is back in the 80s, everyone was given a chance. Actually, it was, let's see here, 84 to 87, 88. This would have been an 89, 90 time frame. They were given they basically gave companies the ability to compete against them. They had what was called the Dial One Wars. This was a time when Sprint, MCI, and AT&T fought for the majority of the, fought for everyone's business. Now, during that time, I had a small business. I was doing some other things, and I was actually selling MCI. I was actually had employees that I had canvassing neighborhoods, talking about long distance service, and signing them up for MCI. And I got paid a commission based upon usage, and I got paid a percentage of the usage. It was very lucrative. It was a great, we made a lot of money. A lot. That's all I can say. A lot. But what happened was AT&T fought this tooth and nail, and it got real dirty. So you would basically have been sent a ballot in the mail, and you would have a list of long-distance providers that you would have to choose from, and you'd have to mail that ballot in saying, I pick this carrier as my long-distance carrier. If you didn't send that in, you were randomly, I think, assigned a carrier. So what our goal was to go around and meet with people, tell them, don't mail that ballot in. Here's what you're going to sign up for. Talk about the options, how much it's going to cost. Well, AT&T got smart in that they found out in most areas, the last ballot in won. So we literally lost thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars because AT&T had their own people on the street selling long distance. And they would wait to the very last minute from collecting ballots for months to take them in and submitting them, essentially disabling any sales that we had done post-mortem, you know, basically post, you know, their approach. And it just was dirty. It was ugly. And I really had a bad taste for AT&T at that time. Well, you know, over time, you know, I forget about some of the stuff AT&T has done. And here I am again, now, seeing here that AT&T is trying to rewrite history books. They don't want us to have unlimited bandwidth on anything. This is just a start. I guarantee you, mark my words, within a year, we're going to face more battles over this, not only with the mobile providers. We're going to start seeing more ISPs start to put in bandwidth limitations and essentially just make us go back to the Stone Age. So I understand 98% of the people are going to be not affected by this. But that's because right now you're not doing things or using a lot of bandwidth. So when you get your nice, flashy 4G phone, it's going to have a camera that's going to point at you. And what you're going to be able to do via data link is you're going to be able to have a video conference call with someone. They're going to see your face. You're going to be able to see theirs. You're going to be able to stream Pandora. You're going to be able to stream this show live. Lots of things that you're going to be able to do on your phones are coming. And they know the usage is going to go up. So in order to stifle competition, stifle innovation on the internet, they're going to impose this 2 gigs of data limit. Now, well, you can buy more. You can buy more. You can buy 1 gig at $10. Now, I will tell you that it cost, the true backhaul cost of 1 gig of data for a company the size of AT&T that owns most of their lines is at most a fraction of a penny, maybe a penny to move a gig. That's how much it costs for them to move a gig of traffic, a penny. So what they have done here is wholesale rape of the American consumer by implementing this new policy. I encourage you to vote with your feet. Androids are looking good. We'll see what Sprint and AT&T introduce. Matter of fact, the Sprint HTC phone is being introduced tomorrow with 4G on it. It might be a great time to look at an Android. So are you guys as appalled as I am? You know, I don't think it's going to affect most iPhone users, but I do think it's going to affect iPad users. So while I still want my wife to have an iPad, I'm going to go ahead, and even if it's going to cost me more money, I'm going to buy her a MiFi, Sprint MiFi, so she can have that with her, surf the net on her iPhone, I mean her iPad, and then when she needs to use a computer, she can use a computer with it whenever she's out. So I don't know. Maybe I've talked too much on this. Maybe you guys will all tell me to shut up, but they threaten a customer with legal action for complaining bait and switch. This is just bait and switch. I just don't get it. I really don't get it. But yet so many sites, oh, it's not so bad. They're giving AT&T a pass. Site after site after site is giving AT&T a pass. Why? Why are they giving AT&T a pass? Does no one have any guts to say, AT&T, you're wrong? Does no one have the fortitude to tell this company it's wrong? Love to hear your feedback. Please, 808-741-4923, geeknews@gmail.com. And man, I just talked way too long about that. On better news, there is a hint that YouTube may be coming with a live stream option. This was covered by the folks over at TechCrunch. And they found a little gem today. It's being shared by some Google employees that shows a live stream button. Now, I'm sure the livestream.com folks aren't very happy about this. But could YouTube be getting ready to introduce live streaming? What does that mean for all of us? Well, I tell you what that means. Game over for some other companies. This will be big. If they make this available, sign me up. Absolutely. Save me an additional step of putting moving my video around. So are you guys excited? Do you think that's would be a cool thing? All right, over in Russia, they're doing a simulated 520-day Mars mission. It has begun. There is six guys that are locked up inside a module. Three Russians, one Chinese, one French, and one Italian are locked up in this tube, and they're going to pretend to fly to Mars and back, having 30 days on the ground, and they're going to have 520 days locked up with one another. Could take a shower once every 10 days. They're going to be doing extensive experiments and exercise, and probably at about day 300, probably fighting with one another. But they're going to have internet, but it's going to be delayed communications. It's going to simulate being that far away from Earth, and we'll see. We'll see what happens with this, but the French and the Russians and the Italian are being paid a little over $100,000 for the 500-day test, and they didn't reveal what the Chinese guy was being paid. Probably the Chinese told him, "You go do this, or we'll shoot your family," or something to that effect. So, I'm sorry, but who knows what the Chinese guy's getting paid? They went and revealed that he might be making $130 a month, just like those factory workers in China. We'll talk about that at the end of the show. Hey, the D8 conference was going on this week. Of course, the D8 conference is sponsored by the Wall Street Journal, and it's been interviews all week with some of the biggest names in the tech space. Steve Jobs was on earlier in the week. Ray Ozzy, Steve Ballmer, you name them, they were all on there. But one question that came up during the actual interview with Steve Ballmer and Ray Ozzy was, Ballmer questions why Google is going after two operating systems, Android being one and essentially Chrome as another. And he's wondered why they're going down two paths at once instead. And I didn't even really consider Chrome an operating system, but then I got to thinking about it. Yeah, they talked about putting Chrome on machines. So we'll see what happens here with this. But it was kind of a strange criticism with it, their phone and tablet OS and operating system with it being Android. And then their desktop stuff being Chrome. So it doesn't quite make total sense. You think they would vest with one or the other. But Ozzy at least seems to think, Steve Ballmer seems to think that they should have picked one specific path and only one. But Google's big enough. They can probably handle both. Hey, little news coming out of Skype. And this was over at arstechnica.com. The folks at Skype have put into beta test something called RDO, R-D-I-O, radio being short. It's a, it's basically radio spelled with no A. But Skype founders have moved onto this venture, a music streaming service, and the service is going to differentiate itself from the crowd by combining the appeal of other traditional internet services with the ability to stream your own music to your mobile device. And this is not yet open to the public, but they have made some deals with EMI, Sony, Universal, and Warner Music. The question I have on this is, why do they say that it, you're going to be able to stream your own music, but yet they've made deals with these four record labels? It must be some sort of a hybrid, and it may cost you up to $9.99 a month to do this. Pricing isn't yet set, but completely firm, but we'll keep an eye out on what they're going to do there. Hey, the Federal Trade Commission today slapped a company called CyberSpy. The company's going to stop marketing its keystroke logging software. And the reason the FTC went after them was that the way they advertised the product was that they showed people how they could install this secretly on other people's computers and actually spy on them. So there's other companies that sell this kind of stuff, and some of the stuff has been covered on Oprah before, where she's told wives what they can put on their computers to catch their husbands doing stuff. So CyberSpy was designed to basically keystroke log, take images of the computer screen and so forth, and give someone remotely the ability to see what's going on. But under the settlement, CyberSpy will no longer offer its customers a way to disguise what's called remote spy as an innocent file or email attachment. In other words, they were actually being able to send this via email, so it's actually going to have to be physically installed. It says, additionally, the company must tell purchasers the improper use of the software may violate the law, obviously. So the FTC also instructs the firm to reduce the risk that their spyware is misused, encrypt data transmitted over the internet, and they want them to police their affiliates, ensure they comply with the order, and remove legacy versions of the software from computers on which it was previously installed. So we'll see what happens with this as it moves forward. Hey, there's a good article talking about basically individuals responding to peer-to-peer lawsuits. Now, if you receive a, essentially, if you get served and one of these peer-to-peer lawsuits, and you try to file a, basically a brief with the court, don't do this by hand. And don't do this by yourself unless you're a lawyer. Go out and hire a lawyer if you plan on, you know, responding to the court. And I'm going to bring this up real quick for those of you on Ustream to actually see. Here's an actual response that was sent by an individual that had been served. You can see it's handwritten. Starts off by United States District Court for the District of Columbia. Docket number gives a list of, you know, the docket, the DOE version 1 of 749, civil action number, motion to quash, yeah, use the word quash, or vacate the subpoena. Now, here's another thing. This individual filed this in a way that made their address and, you know, name publicly available to the folks that are going after him. Here's another one that was an actual a response was faxed. It was a motion to quash or vacate the subpoena. So I don't know where, if people found this information on the internet and copied it and figured that if they hand wrote it, this would impress the court. But if you're going to go toe-to-toe with a legal firm, you better hire a lawyer. When I read these, I was like, you have got to be kidding. And just if you read through it, it definitely reads like a layman has written it and tried to have come up with some, I guess they were watching too much Law and Order or something like that on TV, because I'm throwing myself on the mercy court to have this quash or vacated. This is a very strong hardship for me. All of this being over 100 miles away and me not knowing any knowledge of this at all. Boy. Yeah. I'm sure the judge was impressed with this motion to dismiss. Don't do this, folks. And I hope no one from the Ohana has tried to do this on their own. I know you guys are more savvy than that. All right, let's move on to the next article. Hey, Verizon is seeking partners to blanket rural U.S. with 4G broadband. And, Verizon was the winner in the 700 megahertz band auction in 2008, with Verizon having purchased $9 billion worth of continuous licenses in that zone. It says it's looking for rural companies to help it collaborative build and operate 4G long-term LTE networks in the countryside. And the local carriers will provide towers and backhaul lines to them. Verizon will bring the core LTE equipment and regional 700 megahertz license, which can transmit voice and data across rural country-sized distances. So we may get LTE to rural America. Pretty exciting stuff. We'll see what Verizon does there. Hey, Microsoft is previewing the Windows Embedded Compact 7. And you guys are going to kind of laugh when you see this. I'll have this link up in the show notes for you to check out. But as all the articles tonight. But for those of you that are watching on Ustream, doesn't this kind of look a little bit like an iPad? Microsoft has announced the Windows Embedded Compact 7 Public Community Technology Preview. In other words, it's the next generation of Windows Embedded CE platform, which, according to Microsoft, is going to provide OEMs with the tools and technologies to deliver the power of Windows 7 across another family of specialized devices. But what I thought was kind of cute about this was the design kind of looks like an iPad. But it's actually the one that's actually shown here is the ASUS Triple E Pad EP101TC, and it's built on the Windows Embedded Compact 7 concept. So I think this is the year for a variety of different iPad-type devices are going to be coming out from a lot of companies. All right, very soon we're going to start seeing companies like the New York Times, Financial Times, the Sunday Times Online, and a variety of other newspapers start to erect paywalls once again. And, you know, we haven't seen paywalls for a number of years. I think the last time paywalls were tried, at least in the UK, were back in 1997. And companies really, consumers didn't go for it then. Are you going to be willing to pay to get the Sunday version of New York Times Online? Are you going to be willing to pay for that? This is a question that I'd like to have some response from all of you. Are you guys going to pay for newspapers online? Now, let me talk just a little bit. Oops, let me go back here. Oh, that was weird. One thing that we have had happen here in Honolulu is we're going to a one newspaper town starting next week. The Honolulu Star Bulletin will cease to exist, the Honolulu Advertiser will cease to exist, having been replaced by the Star Bulletin. So this is the first strike here, at least in Hawaii, of going to one newspaper town. Many of you are probably already in that situation already. But there's been some local startups that have, or actually a startup here in Honolulu that is doing an online version that is very expensive to subscribe to. But are you guys going to pay for news, local news, or nationwide news like the Wall Street Journal with these internet paywalls are going up? I'd like to hear you guys' feedback on that. If you plan on subscribing and supporting the news industry that way, or is this really the beginning of the end for many of these companies in their last hurrah to try to get more money out of this? That's the question that I'm looking for. Is this, what are we going to do if the Wall Street Journal can't survive? Curious possibility, isn't it? All right, Google is close to handing over German Wi-Fi data. Finally they have acquiesced to the German government, and they're going to be handing that data over. Essentially, the disk is going to contain the Wi-Fi data from the Google Street View cars gathered by mistake. So this is going to be handed over to him. And a statement by, I don't know, who, I guess this is German Regional Information Commissioner, Dr. Johannes Kasper, said he expected Google to continue on the path of cooperation and transparency. And Google had until the early hours of May 27th to hand over the data to the Hamburg Information Commissioner's Office. But I guess Google answered many of the Information Commissioner's questions in time and made the Street View car data available for the first time, I guess, just today. But so we'll see what happens here. But Google has essentially made the data available to the German authorities. What they're going to do with that, I don't know. But there's lawsuits going on here in the United States on that data as well. This is big news. This is actually kind of surprising to me. The mobile satellite provider Iridium has ordered 81 new spacecraft. Actually, I didn't put this up yet. 81 new, this is on BBC, 81 new spacecraft to replace aging satellites. That's a huge order. This is a $2.1 billion deal has been underwritten by the French Export Credit Guarantee Organization called COFACE. And they're thinking that this build-out could cost as much as $2.9 billion, but this is unprecedented. Now, if you remember, Iridium was in Chapter 11 back in 2000 and was bought by investors who paid a fraction of the cost of setting up the first constellation. And today, the company is essentially owned by McKellen, Virginia-based company. With 360,000 subscribers, and most of its revenues, a quarter of the revenues, come from the United States government and Department of Defense contracts. So, this is huge. 81 new spacecraft to be launched. And I'm sure there's, you know, this is probably their next gen, trying to get them up to speed and bringing data services, a much higher speed data service to the Iridium network. But, Iridium has always been expensive. I remember when I was in the Navy, I think we were paying, oh man, was it $8 or $9 a minute for Iridium service? It wasn't cheap. Plus the monthly subscription for the receiver and everything else was huge. It really, really was. All right, over on Bloomberg's Business Week at businessweek.com, there's a good article about a power station outside the village of Drax in the UK. It's about 150 miles north of London. That it's in the same area where a lot of other power plants are in the UK, and a majority of them are coal-driven. But the Drax Group, which owns the facility, is now have done some updating to the power plant. And they're now using renewable energy sources, primarily elephant grass. Now, I don't know where the heck they're growing that at, bring it in from. But 12.5% of the power generation capacity of this plant is now being generated from elephant grass. So that's kind of interesting. So it's alternative to coal. And, of course, with all this stuff going on with the carbon credits and all this stuff, they want to start getting some green credits as well. But some discussions going on in the UK about whether to go nuclear or bring in alternate to power sources. They're trying to phase out coal stuff. So our coal generated power plants, to me, and you know, may take this, don't take this the wrong way. Let's go nuclear. Come on. You know, it just seems to me it would be, even though there's a lot of nuclear waste, think about the total number of super tankers we bring from the Middle East every day to not only feed our car habit, but also to power plants. Here in Hawaii, everything's on oil. And, of course, the folks in Hawaii will never go for nuclear power, but it just seems like such a smart way to go. You got to do the green stuff, too. But you get so much bang for the buck out of nuclear. I just don't see why it is being poo-pooed or paw-pawed. You know, basically people not wanting to, they're so scared of it. The U.S. Navy runs a lot of ships on nuclear power. Hey, it's fuel. Don't worry about it, where it comes from. Researchers are looking at chocolate dirty diapers, turkey fat, bones, and gristle. One guy in Beverly Hills was actually using human fat to power his car, and he was a liposuction, basically plastic surgeon. He got in trouble, and he quit using it. They're saying even our urine may be used as power. Beef byproducts, coffee, cow manure can all be used for power sources. So this is everything they're looking at as potential alternative energy, stuff that can be burned. I don't know about chocolate. It's kind of a weird one. All right, there's a big launch coming up, possibly as early as today. And actually, did I lose the article? Maybe I did. The Falcon 9 is on the launch pad at Cape Canaveral. And the Falcon 9 is more than 18 stories tall. So over $100 million has been invested by private investor and space pioneer Elon Musk and other investors. But they're expecting to try to launch this thing tomorrow. They're hoping it's not going to blow up on the pad. But they've had some launch failures already. But we're going to continue to see if they can get this thing in the air. But this may be an alternative lift capacity for the United States if they get the bugs worked out and able to make some successful launches. But NASA has chipped in with a contract to help defray cost, and they promised to SpaceX an additional $1.6 billion if they can deliver cargo to the International Space Station. So we'll see what happens. But Friday's flight is going to last, or today's flight is going to last about 10 minutes if the rocket and its dummy capsule reach orbit. So they say they have about a 70-80% chance of success. And if I, if I'm here at the house when this launch potentially goes down, I'll try to stream it live. But that's the word on the street. They're going to try to launch this Falcon 9 today, and we'll see if they if it makes orbit or not. So pretty exciting stuff on the basically independent space launch vehicle space. News out of Mars is that a mineral that was uncovered by Mars exploration rover Spirit has really got scientists really excited. One of the rocks that they uncovered points to water and a very wetter past. The team described in a science journal how they calibrated the instrument to remove the effects of dust. And they are really thinking what they have found really proves that by finding this small amounts of carbonate minerals, that they're seeing very high potential that Mars was once had a lot more water on it than obviously what it does today. So pretty exciting for from a scientific standpoint. Next article up is let's talk a little about the oil spill a little bit. I was watching on the news. They actually got the I was watching some of the stream today and some of the underwater work. You know, it's just like this is like when I was watching the robots working and cutting the pipe, and it was kind of mesmerizing. It really was. It really stuff happens really slow. But you know that movie Alien? It really kind of reminded me of that murky look. And I don't know. They got the cap on. Now they're going to see if this thing can, you know, suck the oil up into a tanker. But one thing was asked of officials in charge of managing the leak. They were asked on Thursday why they had not considered using a nuclear or other explosive to try to seal off the well. And apparently this has been used 5 times by the Russians to seal gas wells. And essentially the Coast Guard Admiral on the scene has basically said, that I don't think, this is quoting here, he says, I don't think we want to take the chance of somehow disturbing that where the oil would have direct access to the seafloor. To my mind, it would be a pretty serious risk. In other words, he's saying if they, you know, put the nuke down, you know, within a certain distance of the well, of the well pipe, touched it off, and he would basically be doing an underwater test, similar to an underwater test, but, the, you know, it would... It would be like a on-ground test where the actual hose filled and you just get the, you know, the rays of the earth and everything settles. He's worried that the oil that's in that oil deposit could actually be unleashed. and causing a much bigger issue than what we already have. The comments came after the New York Times basically had said that the U.S. government was not considering using a nuclear device, despite the reports that some experts and armchair engineers were suggesting it. So both the U.S. Energy Department has said that no one was contemplating a nuclear blast to try to halt the leak. And they basically said it's crazy. You know, this thing continues and they can't get it stopped. Maybe it won't become so crazy. We'll see. Love to hear guys' feedback. Should they have done this from the very get-go? You know, a very low yield weapon, you know, buried deep next to the oil head. Like, you know, just to me, it kind of, or even a very high explosive seems to me like would made a lot more sense. But I guess I'm not making the big bucks over there. But, you know, nothing else has worked. If you are traveling through Cleveland, Ohio, if a police officer eyeballs you and thinks you're speeding and gives you a ticket, a 5-1 ruling in a court within the Columbus District has basically said that police officers can give you a ticket by estimating your speed. So they don't need to have a radar gun on you, and they can do an unaided visual estimation of your speed and give you a ticket for that amount. Wow. Okay. So watch out for the police officers in around the Columbus area, okay? All right, if you are an app developer, how to get rejected from the App Store. He's got a great list here. I'm not going to go through these. I'll have these linked up in the show notes. The number one obvious thing is don't write lousy code. So I think we all can agree that's probably not a good idea to write bad code. But there's a whole list there of ideas or things or suggestions to potentially get your app rejected. PC Magazine tested 6 3G and 4G networks to determine which ones were the fastest and the slowest in 18 different U.S. cities. They focused on data, not calls, and using their own testing script and methodology to basically do the test using laptops, using more than a dozen people, and they ran over 10,000 tests. And believe it or not, and this is just blows me away, they found AT&T is the both the fastest national 3G network and also the least consistent. And what I just don't believe at all, Sprint 3G system was the slowest of the four big carriers, but was the most consistent. And I find this to be the opposite. I find Sprint to be the fastest. Everywhere I go, it's just completely blows me away. It says, when the test results were broken down by regions, AT&T led on speed in the southeast, central, and west. But T-Mobile took the crown in the northeast region. Sprint's 4G network was fast where it was available, but it was surprisingly slower than 3G in some cities. The fastest AT&T download speed was 5.05 megs per second, and this was right behind Apple's headquarters in Cupertino. And the fastest connection in any of the tests was a blazing 9.1 megs down on Sprint's 4G in Midtown neighborhoods of Atlanta, Georgia. So those of you there in Raleigh, North Carolina, you saw the slowest download speeds of 880 kilobits per second. It blows me away. I don't see that. I really don't. But again, I only use a Verizon and a Sprint card. I've never had an AT&T 3G card, so maybe I'm wrong. Hey, the FTC is thinking about adding or asking Congress to add a tax to electronics, and it would be used to help save the news industry. Yes, you heard me right. I don't get it. I really don't get why the FTC would consider this. Most dangerous of all, the FTC considers a doctrine of proprietary facts as if anyone should gain the right to restrict the flow of information just as information is opening it up. Copyright law protects the presentation of news, but no one owns facts. And if anyone did, you could be forbidden from sharing them. How does that serve free speech? The FTC's one suggestion that could be saluted is more government transparency. The good news in all of this is the FTC bureaucracy tried hard to recommend little. But what they did is very scary. So I'll have this link after the show notes. You guys can check it out. I don't really get this. Many of you have probably seen demonstrations. Many of you have probably had a video camera and you know, videotaped something happening. How many of you have ever videotaped a police officer as he has stopped your car for a traffic stop? Probably not. But police are petitioning states to stop people from recording them. As we know, cameras have become really an effective weapon that ordinary people have and can use to protect themselves against abuse. And the police want to stop it. Judge, juries, and legislatures support the police overwhelmingly on this issue, with only a few cases where those accused of basically hurting police officers have been vindicated through the courts. So, wow. If we're all asleep here, if it won't be very long, we will not be able to sleep, record police officers doing what they do. Sounds kind of funny. They can record us. We should be able to record them, right? I don't like the thought of this at all. They don't want us recording them. All right, over in Tech Dirt, court says Border Control can take your laptop for off-site search if they have reasonable suspicion. For a while now, courts have said that you have no Fourth Amendment rights at the border, and Border Patrol Customs have every right to search your laptop for a variety of reasons. This is, as we all know, pretty problematic. And yet, the courts don't seem to take this into account, and it appears that it has been a ruling now that says that they can do whatever they want at the border. So be aware there. You know, this is kind of on again. This is kind of calmed down for a while, but we knew this was a potential thing that may happen to you. But there's no rules limiting what they can do and what they can look at. And the administration tried to clarify the rules. They said they're still pretty free to search anyone's laptop, but one of those rules was you were allowed to be present. And this is not the case anymore. So we'll see if this is what goes on. I wonder if you're a reporter and you claim to be a reporter when they try to take your laptop, what would happen there? Interesting. All right, the EFF, Public Citizens, and ACO have asked a judge to quash mass subpoenas from the U.S. Copyright Group. Of course, we know the U.S. Copyright Group is really a D.C.-based law firm called Dunlap, Grubb, and Weaver. We know that Time Warner was pushing back on this because they were basically sending them thousands of requests for information on who owns specific IPs. And so the EFF, of all people, of all organizations, Public Citizen, ACLU, has basically come to the rescue of Time Warner, saying we need to stop this. So a pretty good write-up on this. And I have this linked up in the show notes for you. Article over on Tech Dirt. Just want to drop. Hey, questions being asked. And I thought television productions were required to disclose product placement in TV programming. But it appears that that is not necessarily the case. So the question is being asked, why is product placement okay on TV without disclosure, yet bloggers have to publicly disclose any type of product placement or paid or subsidized type of content? It is kind of an interesting question to be asked. Celebrities are always given stuff, and celebrities are endorsing stuff, but they don't disclaim that they're being sponsored. This happens quite a bit. You look at the red carpet ceremonies where celebrities wear dresses by famous designers. They're given those dresses, they're given those jewels, yet they don't have to disclose who gave them to them. It's more often this is Armani or whatever the type of dress or suit it may be. And yet bloggers have to disclose everything. I believe in disclosure. You guys know that. But so far, the only action the FTC has taken, of course, on bloggers is to go after one website. I can't think of the name of it. Ann Taylor was something to do about giving bloggers gift cards or something like that. But other than that, That is kind of an interesting question to be asked. Article, actually an article written by Mark Cuban. What newspapers can learn from Facebook and mobile? How Google has so far as the biggest loser in the Facebook privacy debate. And I'll just kind of summarize here. Basically, Mark Cuban saying that because Facebook has kind of backed down on some of their privacy stuff and allowed people to shut their information off from the general internet, Google is not going to have access to that data to essentially, search it and index it. Now, at the same point, many of us are using apps on our phones now to find restaurants or find shopping places and so forth, and where we may have used Google before. So Mark's contention is that Facebook is losing some of its control because many of us are using mobile apps and because of the Facebook change in privacy settings that just recently happened. So I don't know. What do you guys think? Are you guys doing more or less search for specific items? Or are you using apps to find restaurants and places to dine, shop, and so forth? My youngest son, he has a habit of taking his helmet off that he uses when he's skateboarding or riding his bike and just throwing it on the ground. And I scold him a lot trying to explain to him the, you know, it's not good to throw your helmet on the ground because it damages it. And when you fall down, you're really going to need it. Well, any helmet is better than no helmet. We all know that. But we want a helmet that's effective and still has all of its safety ratings for that time when you really need it. Apparently, researchers in Germany at the Fraunhofer Institute have developed a manufacturing process that injects microcapsules containing a very stinky oil into the helmet itself, causing it to stink when damaged. This alerts you to that it's time to replace the helmet and makes it very hard to wear it because it's so foul. So I think this is a good idea. I really do. And kid brings in the helmet, it stinks. You're like, oh, you've been throwing it on the ground or you crashed. Time to get a new helmet. Better than new helmet than a broken head. So I think this is a good idea. We'll see if this makes it to market. Those of you that are content creators out there, the Zoom H1 handy recorder is now available. It's a new product available for $99. It records at 24-bit, 96 hertz. And a nice little device. Zoom has made good stuff. You guys know that I have an H4N here that I'm real happy with. But this has made all the circuits today. I'm pretty big news. We talked a little bit about the Foxconn workers, and I was corrected by one of our Akamai listeners here of the show, and he told me that Foxconn is a company based out of Taiwan, yet the factories are in China. I should have knew that, but a pretty good article on Bloomberg today talking about how employees over there work for 12-hour shifts, make a max $132 a month, have to stand as long as 12 hours. They can't talk with their coworkers and just basically treated like slaves. So this kind of contradicts some of the stuff that Steve Jobs said at the conference earlier this week. While $132 probably is, an average wage in China, just pretty shocking that yet they would make people stand for 12 hours and not allow them to talk. That is just in itself. You know, when you're working, you're with coworkers, what do? You chat, right? Good article about what's left of the Sony Betamax decision. You guys know that that was crucial for all of us and fair use. And with the introduction of VHS players years ago, that decision was big. But because of new laws and stuff that's been brought into place, there is some concern that the Sony Betamax decision at this point has been trimmed further and further back to the point that the basic principle set forth by Justice Stevens, who is retiring, is in a lot of cases increasingly unrecognizable. And this is a great article. It makes you really sit back and go, wow. It really makes you realize what has really been happening, what the entertainment industry has been doing to dismantle the core concepts set forth by Justice Stevens in the Betamax decision. You got to read this. You really do. If it doesn't make you, your jaw drop open, for those of you that fully understand the ramifications of this, it could be bad. It really, really could. You know, and it erodes principles of open internet. There's a whole bunch of stuff here that it affects. So I'll have this link up in the show notes for you to check out. Hey, remember last year I went all gaga over the Canon lens thermos? Matter of fact, one of the listeners of the show sent me a link to one of those. I never did order one of those. I kind of just decided it wasn't worth the money to do it. If you're a Nikon fan, well, you can now get a Nikon zoom lens thermos as well. They're available. I have the link up to this in the show notes for you, and you'll get a good laugh. All right, folks, I got, we're going to run long. I've got several voicemails for us and some emails. So let me go ahead and get right into that. Geeknews@gmail.com. Geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline, of course, is 619-342-7365. Open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Here comes the first voicemail.
Hey, Todd. Tom Wiles here, a.k.a. Trucker Tom. Listening to your latest podcast, and you're talking about backup strategies, backing up your data, and you're right, it is really getting insane when you consider the amount of data that the average individual, or at least the average geek, if there is such a thing, is accumulating. And of course, with digital cameras and so on and so forth being so ubiquitous today, that applies to everybody. Now, what I'm doing, I guess about a month ago, I bought a Windows Home server. It's an HP, EX495, and it came with a 1.5 terabyte drive, and it's got three more drive bays. It has an eSATA connector on the back, and I think the total take on it, you can bump it up to like 17.5 terabytes, something like that. Of course, I don't, you know, I don't have that many drives attached to it. However, my plan is to, I've already put a 1-2 terabyte drive in it, and my plan is to add as I need it. Plus, I've got a lot of other external drives, but it is a real mess. All these drives and data, and trying to remember it, where you put it. But I do like the Windows Home Server idea because it does kind of centralize it all in one place. In any case, keep up the great work. We'll catch you later.
Hey, Tom, thanks for that. Of course, you can check Trucker Tom out, Trucker Tom Podcast, and he does a great variety of content, a great breadth of different stories, something always new on a show. Definitely check Trucker Tom's podcast out. Of course, he's over at blueberry.com and truckertompodcast.com as well. Thanks for that as well, Tom. Take care. Be safe out there, okay? And hopefully we run into another one of these times. I'd love to have lunch or something with you again. All right, let's go ahead and get into the next voicemail.
Hey, Todd, it's Chris from the UK.
Hey, Chris.
Just a couple of quick things listening to the episode 580. First of all, as a Geek News Central insider, I got my insider video today. Don't worry about it being raw and edited video. Very interesting. It's nice to see where the geek comes from. Some interesting bits and pieces around the old homestead there. Very interesting and, you know, well worth giving you a donation, you know, for all the shows that I've enjoyed over the years from you.
Thanks.
Secondly, on today's show, you were asking about backup. What do we do for backup? I'm with you, man. You know, I've got some cheap external hard disks. I have multiple hard disks, so I've got multiple backups. You know, one local at my house, one at my father's house, and sometimes I have a third for mission critical applications stored in a fire safe in the garage, which is detached from the house. But then I'm a photographer. So my special backup for this year's photos that I've taken, I in actual fact use some of my 150 gig web space that I have with GoDaddy. I use a program called SyncTree, which FTPs the files up into a folder in my GoDaddy web space that is set up so that it's not visible from the web browser. And, you know, that allows me up to 150 gigs of storage space there for a very low, you know, pounds per year cost. And the 150 gigs that I get with the deluxe GoDaddy hosting package, it gives me more than enough space for the websites that I need, and, you know, enough to store this year's cache of photos, which, you know, next year I will archive those off and then start again with 2011's photos being uploaded. So that's how I do it, my friend. Looking forward to the next show, and I shall catch up with you soon. Cheers, buddy.
Hey, thanks for the call, and thanks, Tom, and both you guys for sharing your backup strategies. And I tell you, my Windows Home server, I have this known feeling that if something goes bad, I can recover. And I've had that machine, you know, running for a couple of years. Matter of fact, I've been thinking about getting one with a little better processor in it. It's just the knowledge that that I've got a good backup and stuff is offsite and in the cloud. It's just, you know, things are really going to have to go really, really bad to lose data. And so I got the special stuff really super protected, and I know everyone else does too. Just don't let it happen to you, folks. Be careful out there with your data and have a good backup plan. All right, let me go ahead and get into the emails here. We're going to get those knocked out real quick here. First email was from, actually came in via YouTube. It's from CodyMan1071. And Cody, I know that you're a long listener of the show. He says, "Hey, Todd, I really want one of those Raw Voice polo shirts." Well, Brian designed these specifically, and they're corporate shirts. He has not made those available anywhere to order. We actually had them specially made because we went with a real high-quality polo. I'll see if I can talk him into releasing the design and then see if we can make these available to folks. Just let you know. I'll see what he says. He may say, "Oh, these are company only," but I'll see if I can twist his arm a little bit. Sometimes he's listening to the show, so we'll see what he responds to that as well. Hey, I got an email here from Andrew Darlow. Of course, Andrew's a longtime listener to the show, a great photographer. He says, "Hey, Todd, hey, helps all well. After hearing you speak about the new Seagate Momentus XT hard drive, I noticed this review." So he gave me some review links here. And some other things, too. OCZ introduces the new 480 gig SSD. Talks about 10 essential BlackBerry apps, an awesome Lego printer. That's cool. Hawaii Solar Bond Initiative. I don't know about that. So I'll just link it up in the show notes. I don't have time to go into it tonight. And also one that's on HawaiiSolar.com. And we can talk about the Hawaii Solar Bond Initiative on another show. Sal says, "Hey, Todd, obviously you haven't been to Grace's Diners for plate lunch. They give you kimchi with your plate lunch sent from my iPhone. Cheers, Sal." Sal, Grace's Diner. Going to have to find it. I'll check it out. Near in Israel reminded me, "Hey, Todd, duh." He says, Near didn't say duh. I said that. Near basically says, "Hey, Todd, come on, email, load." Todd, Foxconn is a Taiwanese company, as you mentioned. However, the factories in question are actually in mainland China. They're very large compounds, a city within a city. Shenzhen is the mobile phone capital of the world, and Foxconn compound is this city. Houses 300,000 workers. They have their own hospitals, fire department, and other related facilities. iPhones and iPads are manufactured in this compound. I thought it important to clarify. Thanks, Near. Near, absolutely right, and thanks for the clarification. He got an email here from Nicholas. Nicholas, I'm finally glad we caught up, my friend, because I've been trying to figure out how to get you your Roku box without having an address. Now I've got your address that'll be going out. Thanks for getting in touch with me. I don't know what happened with email, but it's all packaged up and ready to go out the door. Got an email from Bree, and what is going on with email? She said, "Hey, Todd, I don't have too many problems with AT&T. It's Verizon that gives me agony every day when files goes down from anywhere to 2 to 15 minutes around noon." And probably what it is, Bree, everyone's using their computers at that time. Nancy sends me an email. She says, "Hey, Todd, it was bound to happen eventually. Spyware on the Mac. This program does need a admin password to install, and evidently enough people are satisfied to provide it. It's bundled with free screen savers and stuff like that. She gives me a link to that. Nancy, thanks for that. I appreciate it. I got an email from Trucker Tom talking about Google, that woman suing Google. And thanks for that, Trucker Tom. We talked about that in the last show. And I got an email from Bama Jeff. He says, hey, Todd, social media seems to be helping kids express themselves. This is what I found. Everything is open now and people are free. I think it is a good thing for us. We just need to challenge into something positive. The more children are able to express themselves, the better you get out of them. You get all kinds of creativity coming out of them. Another thing that we notice influencing the writing is that the text language that they are now using on their cell phones, they're bringing it into the classroom and it shows up on our exams. Early on, we told you about worrying about scores in mathematics on the PSE, where about half of these children who took the test failed. Well, there's one more item of serious note. Remember last year when there was a big flap about essays describing antisocial behaviors and mature sexual themes? Well, this year, examiners found that the children were begging for patronage and special consideration, and also that they were using text language to write their essays. So I have this link up in the show notes. Thanks for that, Jeffrey. Kind of convoluted on the email, but we'll put something up in the show notes where you actually see this article. It just basically talks about what's going on with kids and social media. That's it for tonight, folks. Kind of caught up some time here. Thanks for hanging with me. Again, next show will be live from the heartlands of Texas. And two shows in Texas, and then I'll be in Rochester, New York for my first time ever and checking out the area. I may even try to drive over to Buffalo and check Buffalo out. I heard there is some famous chicken wings in Buffalo that I have to try out. So I may have to make the 70 or 80 mile drive over there. And it's been beautiful here in Hawaii. It's been fun to be home and spending some time with the family and stuff. But time to go make some money on the road, and that I will do. But we'll see you next week live again on the show. Those of you that are getting the show via podcast download, hey, thanks for staying subscribed, being part of the Ohana. If you have comments on today's show, geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline, again, is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at 619-342-7365. Until next time, everyone, take care and aloha.